Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Tech Doctor podcast. I'm really pleased to have someone that I have known for quite a few years now and really looked up to in terms of his work in the Apple community. He was really one of the first people that I learned about that was making use of Apple technology when it became accessible, when Apple moved to Intel and really got started with VoiceOver. So I'm very, very pleased to be able to welcome Darcy Bernard to the podcast. And Darcy, please take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
All right. Well, first off, thanks for having me on the podcast today. My name is Darcy Bernard. I've been podcasting since 2005. It's funny, there was about a week between when I first heard of podcasts and my girlfriend Holly and I first started making podcasts. We were just really fascinated with them. Around that time was also when the Mac first became accessible, when OS 10.4 came out. It was the first one with VoiceOver. And I was actually set. I wanted to buy one that first weekend. I didn't. I held back. And then, as it turned out, I ended up waiting almost a year because shortly after that, there was the Intel transition where they transitioned from the PowerPC to Intel. And I figured, well, if I'm going to get a computer, I might as well wait until the one I want is Intel related, which was almost a year. So I spent a year kind of, you know, lurking on the various mailing lists, learning as much as I could.
So just for my own knowledge, because you said something I didn't realize, was VoiceOver actually started on the PowerPC? Was it pre-Intel?
Yes. The version of Tiger that originally came out for the PowerPC, and then it was a month or two later when they first announced they were transitioning to Intel. So there was a period of time, yeah, where all the PowerPC Macs were VoiceOver.
I realized that you didn't actually get one during that year, but did you get any experience with early VoiceOver on the PowerPC Macs? And if so, I'm just really curious what it was like.
I did. I got about a half hour with one a few months before I got one. By that point, I'd been on the list for a little while, the Mac Visionaries list, which was the first list, you know, around that really focused on it. I wanted one before, and I really wanted one after I played with one. Now, it's funny because the first kind of demo I heard, I think it was on ACB Radio. I think they did a demo of VoiceOver back in those days, and I really wasn't sure because it seemed like the way they were, like, you had to hold down control and option for just about everything you did, and I didn't know what I thought about that. But once I started playing with it, I loved it. I was waiting for the what was then the iBook, that the computer that, and then it became the MacBook, because originally they were called the MacBooks and MacBook Pros back in the PowerPC days were called iBooks and PowerBooks, and then they changed them to MacBook and MacBook Pro. And so, yeah, it was about the same as Tiger was later on. I remember being really impressed with that tutorial that they do, you know, when you first turn it on.
That is one of the great things about VoiceOver and the Mac, I think, is for new users, is that tutorial, because when you power up a Mac with VoiceOver, that immediately comes up, and it's actually quite a well done tutorial.
It is, and they don't try to teach you everything. Basically, it's just like, here's everything you're going to need to know to go through the setup process, and then afterwards, you know, you can branch out. But, you know, you learn about the concept of interacting, which is, you know, I think one of the most important things you need to learn. And you know you learn how to deal with tables and how to deal with buttons and everything like that. And that is super useful.
Had you actually been a Windows user before you got a Mac?
I used a bunch of different screen readers in Windows. The Slimware Window Bridge was the first one I used. And then I used ASAW, which I actually really liked.
But so did I. Yeah.
It didn't. It just. I wish that would have taken off. You know what I mean? Like, I really liked it. It had some. It did some things that none of the other ones did, but it had a lot of flaws.
Yeah, it did. But, you know, ASAW was really kind of a continuation of what the DOS screen reader ASAP had been for Larry Skutkan. And one of the most fun times of my computing life when Windows 95 came out and ASAW came along. At that time, Larry and his wife Donna were living up in Texarkana, Arkansas/Texas. I think the town stretches across the state line, but they were living up there, and so. But that's a long way from me. I'm in a different part of Texas. But nonetheless, and we had a small, our son was a little less than two. So one weekend, we went up to Larry's house and met my good friend Clarence Whaley up there. Clarence, unfortunately, is no longer with us. But met Clarence up there, and we spent the whole weekend just diving into ASAW. And Larry, of course, being the author of the program, was the perfect person to teach us all about it.
Oh, man. And, yeah, and that would have been great.
That was really cool. That was a really fun weekend.
Yeah, because I was real. That was the one I really liked. Because I really liked ASA. Like, that was my first DOS screen reader. Well, that was the only real DOS screen reader I ever used. Because I had an Apple II at one point, and then when I went to the DOS screen reader, that was what I used, and I really liked it. And I liked ASAW, and then obviously it started to taper off. And before I was into the Mac, actually, I was really into Linux for a while there, and I used SpeakUp, which its commands were very much modeled after ASAP, and I really liked SpeakUp, but obviously it was only really good for the command line stuff. But I used Windows, and I used Linux, and I actually kind of, when I first got the Mac, it almost sort of seemed like the best of both worlds in a lot of ways, because, you know, you had the graphical interface, but then you still have that Unix terminal if you go in there.
Exactly.
So I was, you know, I liked both things, and I, for different reasons, and I kind of saw the Mac as the best of both worlds. So I used a lot of different things prior to the Mac.
One thing that really surprises me that a lot of people talk about, having so much difficulty switching from Windows to the Mac. I mean, people will say, and a lot of times these are people who are really tech-savvy people, and I've heard it more than once, so I think there's something to it. They'll say, wow, you know, it seems so hard to make that transition, but I never had that experience. I never thought learning the Mac was difficult, and I just wonder why it's hard for some people. I'm just curious if you have thoughts about that.
Since I've been doing this for so long, you know, a bit, I've talked to a lot of people over the years who are going to make the transition. And the thing that I always tell people is just to remember that OS X is not Windows and VoiceOver is not JAWS. You know, it's not to say they're better or worse, but they are different. And I think sometimes people, like, it is harder. It's very different. Like, the whole, like I was saying before, I think the real big difference in the approaches, the VoiceOver versus the Windows screen readers, is the whole concept of interacting. You know, where you move around and you kind of get like an overview of what's on the screen. And if you want, like, okay, you hear there's a toolbar, and if you want to deal with that toolbar, you interact with it, and then you see the controls of the toolbar.
Right.
And I think that's a big thing. And, you know, there's other issues, like, you know, the way the cursor works, like the way it announces, you know, when you move back and forth while you're editing text, that's something for people to eat. But you could change that if you wanted to. And I don't know. I think you just have to kind of not expect it to be Windows. I mean, it's similar. And I think the people who are having trouble, maybe they're just not making that transition. And I think, like, I remember I used to always tell people as well, because, you know, the big thing when the Intel thing happened was that you could put Windows on it on the computer as well, either, you know, with Boot Camp or VMware or whatever. And I would tell people, you know, unless you are replacing a computer that died and, you know, you need Windows to, like, do your job or something, don't do that right away. Don't, because if you put Windows on it right away, you're not going to use the Mac. You
know, I agree. I absolutely agree.
You have to really try and use the thing. And like web browsing, you know, at first it was difficult because it was different. But if you force yourself to do it, then then you can, you know, you can get used to things. But it's, you really need to do that. You really need to just get in there, and it's going to be frustrating, especially if you were really proficient in Windows. It's going to be it's frustrating when you're at a point, it's like, I don't know how to use this, you know, but you have to push past that.
Yeah, I guess it's like learning anything new. You know, you have to be patient with yourself and tolerate some of that not knowing. But for me, and maybe I'm an exception, but I was thrilled with the idea of not hassling with Windows anymore. I was tired of the viruses, tired of the updates, tired of the feeling like I needed to reinstall it every 6 months to keep it running decently. And so for me, it was like, I am more than happy to spend whatever time and effort it takes to learn to use this Mac and VoiceOver, because I think it's going to be, in the long run, an improvement over what I've been doing. That was kind of my attitude toward it. I don't think that's everyone's attitude.
No. For me, the other reason why I was ready to jump in, right, you know, before I even knew anyone who used it, was it always seemed like the people that I knew, now these were mainly sighted people, but the people that I knew who used Macs prior to that really loved them. You know, like people, it wasn't just, well, I have to use Windows because this is, you know, what I have and this is what I, but people really liked their Macs, and I wanted to kind of know what that was all about. And you're right, there's a lot of stuff that you can get rid of. And like, you know, it's nice too that the screen reader is built right in. You know, as soon as you turn on that computer, I still love that there's a voice telling me that if I want to turn on voice, or if I want to learn how to use VoiceOver, this is how to do it.
Isn't that fabulous? Right out of the box. I mean, you don't even have to do anything.
If you go to an Apple store, you can walk up to any Mac and use it. I love that.
Yeah, like, it is terrific.
It's just amazing.
It is absolutely amazing. Well, one of the things that I'm really kind of curious about, you obviously got the Mac and started learning to use it, and I'm guessing that you and Holly must have started the Screenless Switchers podcast not too long after that.
Yeah, well, the first episode, because we both decided we were going to get Macs, and the first episode was I think the week before we got them, and then the second episode was the night we got them, and it was sort of, the early episodes were very much like us, you know, here's what we've learned, here's how you do some things, that's sort of where it started. And you know, eventually, now we don't really do that podcast that much anymore. When we do, it's usually about, okay, here's a new thing that we've discovered, and here's it. Like, it's actually kind of funny because I'm really thinking about renaming that podcast, because we're not really switchers anymore. You know, it's been a lot. Like, my knowledge of Windows doesn't go beyond Windows XP, really. So I don't even know, like, I would be a switcher if I was to use Windows. You know what I mean? Like, so it was very much we were at the beginning, and I think, I mean, there was certainly, I mean, we weren't by any means the first. It had been out for a good year then. I don't know that there were any other VoiceOver related podcasts specifically then. Like, I think, I'm sure there must have been stuff on Blind Cool Tech and, you know, IC Radio, like I said, but I don't know that there was anything specific then. I think that it might have, ours might have been the first one.
Well, yours is the one that I remember the most from that time, that, you know, that I remember listening to, and it really was very helpful to me when I decided I was going to make the switch to the Mac, or at least my thinking at that time was, I'm going to get a Mac and see whether I like it or not, see whether I can actually make use of this machine. I sort of thought that it would be a second machine, or maybe a computer that I would use sometimes. But within a month or two of getting, and I got a 2008 iMac, which we still have, my wife still uses. Within a month or two of getting it, I realized I actually prefer this. And that was back in the days of Leopard. Then Snow Leopard came along, and VoiceOver got even better, and fortunately has continued to get better with the operating systems as they've come along. And I personally feel like for me, Mountain Lion is the best so far, the most accessible.
Oh yeah, Mountain Lion's, and they have improved steadily. You know, they've added new features and really, but the thing that's interesting is Tiger, you know, it had its limits, but what it did, and this is sort of kind of Apple's, seems to be their way of doing things, that like it didn't do everything, but what it did well. Like mail worked really well, web browsing worked well. There wasn't a lot of I don't know if you call them shortcut keys, but things to like jump to headings and to tables and stuff that there are now, but you could still browse the web with it. Initially iTunes didn't work at all, which, I think, yeah, by 2008, it was, cause I think it was 2007 when it actually did work. And it was funny because it was just like a minor update and it didn't even mention VoiceOver in the updates, but all of a sudden iTunes worked. Cause originally all it said was like, I think like, dim, like it said a bunch of stuff about like dimmed scroll bars and stuff like that, and that's all you got.
It may have been your podcast, but I remember someone, and probably you all, being very excited at that time about iTunes working now. Yes,
it was huge. And then about a year after, but the store still didn't work. The area, which, you know, it's now like an HTML area that you interact with, it would just be like iTunes store dimmed image or something like that. And there was no store. There was a few workarounds for buying songs that you could kind of do, but it was not ideal, especially because if something happened, like, you know, that happens with iTunes periodically where it's like, we've changed our policies, you need to agree to the new terms. We couldn't do that. So we'd have to get help to agree to the new terms. And you wouldn't even know that that was happening. All you'd know is the thing you tried to buy, it just didn't work. So, uh-huh. But it was still, you know, the program itself worked good, like the actual player. You know, that was sort of, actually, it's interesting talking about iTunes because, we had, when we first got our Macs in June of 2006, you know, VoiceOver had been around for a year or more, and at that point, there hadn't been any updates in any conceivable way to VoiceOver, so it was sort of like, you know, is Apple really serious about this? There was an aspect of taking a risk there, because, you know, iTunes still didn't work, all the iLife apps didn't work, iWork stuff didn't work, you know, there was a lot of stuff that didn't work, you know, Apple's own stuff,
So the question was, were they really going to move this forward, or yes, was it going to kind of be a token accessibility kind of step, sort of right, like Narrator in Windows, and then
exactly,
and then not go further?
But then a few months after we got our Macs, there was a WWDC. They had a keynote, and it was great because they actually mentioned VoiceOver. Steve Jobs mentioned VoiceOver, and he said, one of the most important features of the Mac is we feel is that everybody can use it. And he demoed, that's the big thing then was Alex. He demoed the Alex voice, which I remember thinking was just amazing at the time, because at the time we were using, you know, the base, like the voices like Fred and things like that.
Right.
And Alex, I remember being amazed at the fact that Alex breathed.
Yes.
You know, between sentences. Yes. And that just, it amazed me. And they announced that, you know, they were working with Braille displays and all of that stuff. So at that point I wasn't as worried, but it was a little worrisome for a while there, because I mean, I don't know what things are like now, because like I said, my knowledge doesn't extend past Windows XP. But I know when I was using Windows, you know, Narrator never changed. Narrator was always the same. And there was that worry that, you know, the Mac was good. And I think that's why a lot of people didn't want to go to the Mac, because it's just going to be another Narrator.
Right. Yes, that Steve Jobs keynote was really important for me, too. And in fact, I did a speech about Apple at an ACB convention a few years ago, and actually played that section of that WWDC keynote where he demoed Alex, because I saw that as just a real statement that we had not seen from a CEO of a major company before, highlighting accessibility. And I thought that was a really big, important step.
Yeah, because there was no reason for them to do that. I mean, they could have mentioned anything. Like, you know, they weren't talking to like a you know, a blindness organization or any sort of like they were talking to just their normal, like, their developers and the press. You know,
exactly.
that was And it was amazing. And you know, they do mention they don't mention it often at their keynotes, but I don't really expect them to, because we're kind of a small, you know, a group of users. But they do usually mention it, and they often do mention when they have voiceover support.
Well, the important thing really to me is that it's so obvious that whether they mention it or not, they continue to improve it. They continue to develop it. It keeps moving forward, and it gets better and better with every release. And that's what's so exciting. And then, of course, when VoiceOver came to the iPhone and the iOS devices and the Apple TV, wow.
That was huge. I still remember that day very much. Like, we were paying attention to the keynote. I remember listening to it on, because they didn't have the feeds then. Like, they didn't stream it, but there were often, you know, you'd find links of people who, you know, who were there, who were streaming the audio. And I remember they mentioned VoiceOver. And I'm like, did they just say VoiceOver was coming to the iPhone? Like, that just amazed me, because it was like, you know, there were so many people there were so many people who wondered, you know, is it going to be possible for people who are blind to use a touchscreen? You know? And it was just amazing how they did it.
Well, I've told the story before, but I was one of those people who was pretty confident that it would not be possible for blind people to use the touchscreen, and I am so thrilled to have been wrong about that.
Yeah.
But I was in Europe at the time. We were vacationing over there in Italy, and I managed to download one of the podcasts, and I think it could have been one of Josh's Knights of the Roundtable podcasts, talking about that event where the iPhone was announced, and there was a lot of talk about how you would actually do the gestures, and I just couldn't wait to get home to get a hold of one of these and actually have this experience. I mean, I was just too excited to even sleep, you know, just thinking about it. And I guess it's just obviously my part of my personality and part of my background. I like you, had used the Apple II and really didn't want to give it up, but had pretty much to go to Windows to do my job and to keep up with the technology. And I was just thrilled when I could come back to the Apple products, and even more so in a way when I could actually make use of the iPhone, because I had envied people using them and had really wished, you know, that I could. And so that was just such an exciting time. I mean, there are times in my life that have been just landmark events that I will always remember as being really exciting, and that is one of them.
Sure. Yeah, it was very exciting, there were so many, you know, I can remember what people were talking about. You know, that's like, are, you know, will third party stuff be accessible? And if it does, you know, what does that mean? And all of that stuff. And it was funny, because I remember Holly and I, in those first few weeks, we were keeping track on the website. We were trying to make a list of everything that was accessible, and after a while it just became impossible, because, well, I guess Apple Viz is doing it now. They're doing it with a community, but it was just impossible, because it was like for two people to manage it.
You couldn't keep up. There was so much that was accessible.
It was easier to keep track of, I think, what wasn't accessible. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it was just so amazing.
Don't you think that whole process is one of the things that has kind of turned the whole accessibility paradigm on its head? We had never seen a situation where there was more off-the-shelf things accessible than you could talk about.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's weird, because I think even in the last few months, it almost seems like we've turned a corner and it's gotten even better. Like, I don't know if you heard about a month or two ago, Marco Arment, the developer of Instapaper, did a thing on his podcast talking about VoiceOver and the importance of it and everything. And he demonstrated VoiceOver, you know, with his product versus his competitor's product and how well it worked. And since then, I've seen all kinds of tweets from people, like, you know, that he's got me inspired to make my product accessible. And I'm hearing more, because I listen to a lot of different podcasts, I'm hearing a lot of ads for you know, people having these sponsors in their podcasts for apps, and one of the features has voiceover support. And it's just amazing how many people in the mainstream know about this now, and how many apps we're getting.
Yeah, accessible. Marco did us a real favor by doing that, and he's discussed it a time or two since then on podcast, just kind of mentioned it in passing, especially when he has talked about his new magazine app.
Yep.
And it being accessible with VoiceOver, which it is. It's a very nice application.
But it's a good magazine. It's definitely one I'd recommend people take a look
at. Me too. I thoroughly enjoy it. I did email him after that podcast, and unfortunately haven't heard anything back. Didn't really expect to.
No, I think he's a busy guy.
As busy as he is, but
yeah. But it amazes me how many people now know about VoiceOver, and how many, and often all it takes is to write a developer of an app who it's not accessible, and they're like, oh, I didn't really even realize about VoiceOver, and sometimes I think they just want to make it accessible because they think it's kind of cool, you know, like I can do this, I can make it accessible. And you know, it doesn't always happen, but it happens more often than you think.
And it happens so nicely a lot of times, for me at least, with the smaller developers. I love the fact that you don't have to deal typically with a corporation. I mean, look how little success we've had getting Amazon to make the Kindle app accessible versus how a lot of these smaller developers, one or two or 10-person operation, have jumped on the bandwagon, and it takes one or two emails, and before you know it, the next revision of their app many times comes out, and whatever issue you had that wasn't accessible has been fixed.
Yeah, and it really is amazing, and I've always kind of thought that the smaller developers, you know, tend to be more receptive because they can just do it, and they can, and also if you are selling an app. And you know, you can make something accessible to a you know, I don't know what how many, you know, I VoiceOver users there are, but if I mean, it can be a significant, like, it can be worth your time to do that, you know.
And it seems like it's a bit of a ripple effect too. Once you make it accessible and it gets out into the VoiceOver community, then, you know, your sighted friends hear about it and they want to try it, and so before long, a person has sold, I would think, quite a few more of their app than maybe they would have otherwise.
And so, yeah, it's definitely like a differentiator. And you're right, because like the bigger companies, like, I know there have been times, Skype has always been kind of a back and forth, you know, on the iOS version of Skype, like, you know, things will become accessible and then they're not, and then they are, and you never know with them. And the Facebook app is the same way. And you're talking about big companies, but the smaller, you know, independent developers seem really, really interested in making their stuff accessible and keeping it that way.
Yeah, and yeah, fortunately Skype is pretty good right now, and I hope it will stay that way.
It's one of the apps I'm always worried when there's an update, you know, like there's certain apps that's like, I don't know if I, do I have a backup just in case this app, you know, doesn't. But, you know, most apps I'm not worried about, but there are a few like that you never know.
I have a folder in my documents called Endangered Apps. and so I keep a copy of Skype in there that I know works, in case I ever have to go back to it.
You never know with some apps, and it is kind of frustrating there. But, yeah, we're seeing more and more of the independent developers. Like one for example, one thing that I'm seeing a lot of recently, because I've, and I know you have too, the been getting into app.net, and a lot of the app.net clients, like, a lot more are accessible than you might think, you know.
Yeah, and the fact that they are accessible in the very early days of app.net is a very exciting thing, because we can kind of grow up with this app.net platform in an accessible way. We don't know yet how it's going to ultimately turn out or what it's going to be like, but I'm kind of enjoying it so far. And for people who don't know, AppNet is a social networking site that doesn't have advertising because it's a paid service. You pay a certain amount to access it per month or per year, and it's really just getting started, but it looks like it has real potential.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm, and you know, not to get too far off track, is the reason I was interested in it is I'm kind of worried about the future of Twitter, especially in the terms of like third-party clients, just because of the changes they're making. So it sort of seems like that's one of the reasons I've been focusing on Up.net lately is just to kind of, you know, have a backup plan in case, because, you know, there's a lot of changes going on with Twitter right now in terms of third-party developers and what they're going to be allowed to do in the future and all that kind of thing. So,
right, if we should lose a tweet list for the iOS devices or lose Urufukuru for the Mac, you know, I would not be excited about using Twitter from the website.
No, and you know, I don't think I would. And Twitter is such a useful thing because of, you know, it how many people who I follow and who follow me back. It's and I would hate to lose it, but I don't know how much I would go to the website, honestly. You know?
Yeah, I would be more likely, and I think a lot of us would, to use an accessible app.net client, you know?
Yeah.
More likely to move in that direction, and we'll obviously see how that goes within the next year, but it is an exciting community. Right now, there aren't all that many people on it, it doesn't seem like. I mean, there are a significant amount, but it sort of reminds me in a lot of ways of early Twitter days.
Yes, like 2008, 2007, stuff like that. I got on in early 2008, and it was very much like that. It was, you know, not everybody was on it. Most people didn't really know what it was, and it's a lot like that right now. And it's sort of an interesting community.
Yeah, in case people want to try App.net, just to let you know, I have settled on an iOS client called River, which I believe it's RIVR, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I don't know why it's spelled like that, but anyway, it is. And there's also one that I'm using on the Mac that I like quite a bit called Appetizer. And yeah. I know there are others, but those two are working quite well for me at the moment.
Yep, there's a few, and there's a few coming out for iOS that are accessible, like that will be out, that are in the beta stage right now. I don't know how you say his last name, but Marco Zihi or Ziwi or however, the thing says Ziwi, but I don't think that's right because there's no. But anyway, he did a blog post about a week ago, going through all pretty much all the app.net clients on every platform, including Mac, iOS, Windows, and Android, and kind of rating them. And that's a worthwhile thing checking out. I posted it to Maccessibility the other day.
Yeah, I bookmarked it, so I'll link to it in the show notes. So
yeah, definitely, because it's worth reading, and it's worth reading just how many there are. In this early, I mean, app.net's only been around for like 4 months, so it's definitely early days.
Yeah, and it's looking pretty good at this point, so it might be something that you want to check out. Well, one definitely thing that I wanted to do, I want to fast forward to today, really, and talk about some of the current Apple hardware, because I'm pretty excited about what they're doing hardware-wise, and I know it so happens that you and I both just recently got new MacBook Pros.
Yep.
And so I thought it would be worthwhile to talk a little bit about how we made our decisions and the process we went through in choosing what we bought, because I do think the Apple, at least on the laptop side, process has gotten a bit more complicated making selections in the last year, because we have the two models of the MacBook Air, and then we have the MacBook Pros, the new Retina models, but they're also still selling the earlier MacBook Pro models. But then, to further complicate things, you can customize all those laptops in various ways. And so I think it's gotten a little more complicated. What do you think about that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, when I got my first MacBook, they had the MacBook and the MacBook was 13 inches. The MacBook Pro was 15 inches and 17 inches. So those are the three. They had three models, and then you could you could always customize them a little bit. Like you could add more RAM or you could add a bigger hard drive or, you know, things like that. But yeah, there's a lot now. And it would be, it's definitely a harder decision. I mean, especially at that 13-inch size, because you've got the 13-inch Air, you've got the 13-inch non-Retina MacBook Pro, and you've got the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro, and they're all three, you know, very different machines. So it's hard to know which one you want, you know, which is the best buy for what you want to do with it.
Yeah, and I believe that for a person who is blind, who doesn't care about or need the Retina display, and who is satisfied with one of the more basic configurations, certainly the MacBook Air or the 13-inch non-Retina MacBook Pro is a better deal price-wise. Would you agree with that?
I would say so. I would think, yeah, if you have some vision, because people talk about how nice the MacBook Retina screens are. I have to imagine for people who have low vision and need to, like, that would probably be really good for them. But yeah, I mean, I didn't get the Retina because I didn't really need it, and I know that the reason I went with the Pro even over the Air is just because, you know, it's a little bit faster, it's a little bit I think it had better battery life, and it still has like the all the ports, like the card reader and the Ethernet port and the optical drive, which I really didn't care that much about the optical drive because I don't use it that much anymore. But it is larger than than the MacBook Air or the, you know, the Retina Pro. It's a bigger, you know, bulkier computer that it hasn't changed in a few years.
So just to clarify, you went with a 13-inch non-Retina MacBook Pro.
Yes, but I did customize it a little bit. I got the by default, it comes with a 500 gig spinning hard drive, and you could pay more, which is, it's kind of weird when you look at it because you're paying more for less as far as storage. But right. I ended up paying more, and I got the SSD. I just got the 128 for now, and I have to say that the SSD it's just so amazing how fast the thing boots up. You know. You turn it on, you're at the login screen almost immediately. So,
right, and just to contrast a little bit with what you did, I did decide to go with the Retina MacBook mm-hmm. Pro, the 13-inch, and not because I can make use of the Retina display, but I was certain that I wanted a 256 gig SSD. I wanted 8 gigs of RAM. And I really wanted the i7 processor.
Yeah.
And so when I configured a 13-inch MacBook Air, it came out to surprisingly close to the same price as the 13-inch MacBook Retina, because you have to add a lot more customization to the Air to bring it up to those specs that are a lot of them default specs on the MacBook Pro Retina.
Yeah. Like I think mine had, like, because mine has the i7, it has the 8 gigs of RAM, it has the but it only has 128. There was a huge difference in price between 128 and 256, what they were selling it for. But it is a bulkier computer than the I haven't had a chance to see the Retina MacBook Pros, but I just from reading about them, I know they're not quite as heavy and big. I mean, it's not like, it's so funny how this is now considered a big laptop.
You right.
know, I remember my old, like, Toshiba satellite laptop that I had in the late 90s, and the thing was huge by comparison.
Absolutely, you know? Right, and hugely heavier than these machines.
Yeah, but it's still a lot bigger, and I was torn, really, between the Air and this particular model of MacBook Pro, because Holly got the MacBook Air, and it's a nice machine. It's just amazing how small it is. Like, it, you know, you hold it on your lap and it doesn't even, like, this can't possibly be a computer. You know, it's just, it's so light and so small. I just wanted a few extra features, but it's you really need to go through and what I would recommend anyone do is go to the store, go to the online store, And, you know, you don't have, you're not committing to anything, but just go through all the customized things how you want for each computer and just see what the prices are. Because yeah, it changes as you do it.
So. That's what I did. And one of the greatest things about that is that process is fully accessible with VoiceOver.
Yes, it is.
It works great. And you can even see the prices update dynamically as you add something or delete something from your configuration. And it works really well. And you can sit there and customize to your heart's content. Of course, you just don't click the buy button until you're actually ready to buy. But you can customize and compare prices. What was really interesting for me was I'm fortunate in that in working for a university, I'm eligible for the educational discounts. Uh-huh. And they offer a $100 discount on the MacBook Air and MacBook Pro 13-inch. Mm-hmm. But on the 15-inch MacBook Pro, they offer a $200 discount.
Oh,
so
really?
When I configured everything, I could get a 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro actually a little cheaper than what I could get a 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro for. But I really didn't want the larger size machine because I carry my MacBook Pro back and forth to work every day.
Sure. Yeah.
And I just didn't really want to be carrying the 15-inch around. But it's something to think about because the 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro has a quad-core processor if you need that or care about that. I'm perfectly satisfied with the dual-core i7.
Yeah, that's what I've got here, too. And it's you know, I'm very seldom am I going to come anywhere close to taxing it, you know.
Well, one of the things that I've been really surprised by with this MacBook Pro is how cool it is. And I'm not talking about how nice it is. Yeah. I'm talking about the temperature of it. One, which is really interesting, I have not yet heard a fan come on. So the machine is completely silent. Whether a fan ever is coming on and it's so quiet I don't hear it, I don't know. But I'm guessing it probably hasn't been coming on because to the touch, the machine, even right now as we're recording this podcast, is perfectly cool.
Yeah, mine is too. And it's amazing because I know that my first MacBook I had the MacBook Pro, which is almost like design-wise looks the same as the one I have now. They would get hotter, and it doesn't seem to. I mean, if you really get it working, it can. But it heats up. But yeah, I don't really hear the fan on mine either. And it's so weird because, you know, before you would hear the fan, you would hear the noise of the hard drive, and that's a weird thing to get used to.
Because
you don't really know if it's doing anything. You know, we always use it as a means of like, okay, well, it's clearly doing stuff because the hard drive is making noise. But now it's like. I just have to trust that it's working. I
mean, exactly. That's one interesting thing for a blind person is you have no audible clues that we normally got used to, like listening to the spinning up of the hard drive or the fan. It's totally silent. The other thing that's funny about the Retina MacBook Pro is that it no longer has a power button. They use the eject key. What was formerly the eject key, the top right key on the keyboard as the power button now. And so I was like, I took the thing out of the box. I was like, there's no way to turn this thing on. There's no power button. But, you know, eventually asked on Twitter and somebody said, oh, it's probably what was formerly the eject key. Because you no longer have an optical drive in these units. So there's nothing to eject. Although, I mean, you can always use the command E to eject a disk image or whatever, but
right.
Anyway, it's really quiet and it's really cool. And I'm also amazed by the battery life. I'm getting really good battery. I have no problem using this 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro all day at work. Now, in all fairness, I don't use it all day. I'm not on it 8 hours of my 8-hour workday. I'm probably on it 3 or 4 at most days because I do have to actually work. I can't spend my whole day on my Mac.
Right.
But I find almost no power consumption when it's asleep, when the lid is closed.
Yep.
And that really surprises me because that's an improvement over my 2009 MacBook Pro, although, of course, by the time I stopped using it every day just a few weeks ago, the battery was 3 years old and it wasn't quite getting the battery life that it had before.
Yeah, I think we may have had the same, because I had that one too, and it wasn't getting the, and I was getting, sometimes like a service battery warning pops up on it, and it just doesn't last very long, and it but yeah, that's 3 years of constant use, so, yeah, the batteries that they put in these things are pretty amazing. Like, they're pretty close to, like, when they tell you, and I think Apple's pretty good for this. When they tell you, when you're looking at the specs for a computer or really any other devices, what they give you for battery life is pretty indicative of what you're going to get. You know, they're not showing you a best case scenario. Like, they've got nice batteries.
I think Apple's one of the few companies that I've worked with that are really honest about battery life. They never overestimate. That I've seen. They really do tell you what they say you're going to get is probably what you're going to get if you don't actually do a little better than what they than what they predict, which is nice because you can I've learned that you can trust that.
Yeah. And you really can go the whole day on these things without having to plug them in.
I actually bought a second power adapter, AC adapter to keep at work, and I haven't even taken it out of the box. It's still wrapped in the cellophane, and I, you know, someday I'll need it because someday I'll be making a recording or doing something where I'll need to plug it in. So I'm not really sorry that I bought it, but
no.
But I haven't taken it out of the box yet, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, it never hurts to have those wherever you happen to need them to be. So yeah, it's never a bad thing.
Yeah. And so I am really, so as it sounds like you are really happy with my new MacBook Pro. I'm really excited about this hardware that we have now.
Yeah. And the nice thing too about Apple stuff is it lasts, like, you know, people do talk about that Apple stuff is more expensive and you know, that's true, but they are good quality machines. You know, when I was done with my old MacBook Pro, I gave it to my parents and they're perfectly happy with it. You know, it's like it's still a good machine and they're well built, you know, well designed pieces of hardware that, you know, if treated well can last for years.
I'm really fussy, really particular with my equipment. I take really good care of my equipment.
I do too.
And honestly, and I passed my 13-inch MacBook Pro onto my wife, and she's really happy to have it. Mm-hmm. Honestly, you know, that machine, I can't tell that it's any different than it was when I took it out of the box 3 years ago. I mean,
right.
It did have Leopard on it back then. Now it's got Mountain Lion, so it's been updated throughout the years. But in terms of the quality of the aluminum case, the feel of it, the how well the keyboard works, any of those things that you might expect to have deteriorated over 3 years, I can't tell any difference.
No. Still really, like, the only thing about mine and as you said yours is too, you know, the battery doesn't last as good as it used to, but that's to be expected.
Yeah, if I were to replace the battery, it would really probably, there's no reason why it couldn't go another 3 years.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the quality of the hardware. And, you know, people make fun of me, I guess some people do, for saying this, but I just love the feel of Apple hardware.
I do too.
I love how that aluminum case feels on the Mac, and I love how the iPhone feels. In fact, I don't even keep my iPhone in a case because I like feeling it so much.
And I do too.
And so, you know, people I know who are sighted enjoy looking at the design, the rounded corners and the way the machines are put together and all that. But if you're a kind of person who that sort of thing is important to you, you are going to love Apple hardware.
Well, I remember the first time I went to an Apple store, I only had my first Mac for a little while, a couple months. And that was the first time I was at an Apple store. And I walked around to all the different computers, and I remember seeing the iMacs. And I was like, I don't need one of these. I don't even know where I would put one of these. But I want one anyway, because I like the look of them. I love the design of all their products.
The new iMac is very thin. I haven't actually seen one yet.
No, I haven't either. I would like to. I mean, I remember just being so surprised, even the first ones that I saw, just how it's like, wow, the whole computer is just in this monitor thing. That's pretty amazing. And I loved the look of them. I love the look of all their products. They look like they've kind of gone the extra mile as far as design.
There is no other product that I've seen out there that I like the look of and the feel of as much as the Apple products. And that's important to me. I don't know. I just get so much pleasure out of that.
Yeah.
And I never, walked around sort of enjoying the feel of my Nokia 6682 or whatever, yeah. Whatever it was. Yes, it was plastic and it was a device that worked and helped me do things, but I never just was in love with the device the way that I am with Apple products. And call me crazy or not, but I'm not the only person who feels that way.
No. That's a big part of it. I mean, I don't think they would go through that. I don't think they would go through that extra. Often when you watch any of their keynotes, it often seems like, and they show you those videos of like the process of. It often seems like they talk about they always have to come up with these new manufacturing processes just to accomplish what they want to do, like the whole like aluminum unibody stuff. When they first did that, they had to figure out how to do that, and it just is amazing. Like it's so funny because a lot of times you look at an Apple product and you're like, I don't even know how this goes together. Like if they wanted to take it, like, because you don't see like the screws or you don't see like. Unless you really look for them, you don't see all that stuff. And it's just like, how does this even work? Like, how is this? They often look like one solid piece of material.
You cannot tell by feeling it how an iPhone is put together.
Yeah.
You just can't. Yeah, I think it's so interesting how they develop the technology to build some of these things. They recently have been talking about a new system of welding that they use, and they've been talking about various things that the factories in China, the Foxconn, are having to innovate to be able to assemble these products because the design is so intricate and so complicated. And it's really fascinating in a way. And now with some of the changes in the executive team at Apple, the designer, Johnny Ives, has taken over the design of both the hardware and the software. So I think we're going to see some extraordinary design things to come in.
I think so, yeah.
In the next few months, in the next year. It's really a very exciting time for Apple, and it's so funny to me. There are the naysayers who are saying, oh, Apple has lost its touch, or, they're declining or whatever, but I see absolutely no evidence of that. No. I don't think there's any truth to that whatsoever.
No, I think Steve Jobs, when he was there, brought in at least what he thought were the best people. And, those people are, there have been a few changes, but most of those people are still there. And, I think they're going to continue to do really good work. And, there hasn't been any sign that things are slowing down. Like it's amazing, and it's fun to watch. It's exciting to see when they come up with something new, what it's going to be and what they're going to do. The drawback, of course, is that I'm going to want whatever it is they have, but
well, that's what I'm struggling with right now. I just bought a MacBook Pro, as we said, and I'm really wanting for the first time an iPad. I'm wanting an iPad mini. And my wife has an iPad 1, and I don't use it that often. I just update it for her and help her when she needs something on it. I haven't been that excited about the iPad for me, but for some reason, I'm really excited about the iPad Mini. What do you think of it?
I think so. I got an iPad 1 a few months after they came out, and I like it. I don't use it much anymore because, you know, it couldn't update to iOS 6, and even with iOS 5, it was kind of sluggish with VoiceOver. So I don't use it that much anymore, and I think the idea of a smaller one is kind of exciting because, you know, you can take it more places, I haven't had a chance to play with one yet. But I think, you know, if I were to get an iPad, if I were to get another one, I would seriously have to think about the Mini.
I saw one briefly at Best Buy the other day here, and it's hard to, they're tethered to the counter at Best Buy, and so it's even hard to tell really how heavy they are and to tell a lot about them. But I really like the size of it and the thinness of it, and I'll probably wind up with one here before too long.
That's one thing I like about two of the Apple stores. If you can, when you see the stuff there, they have it tethered. Usually it's by the docking cable or something, but you can pick them up.
Yes.
And you can get a really good feel for what they're like, without like the weight of them and all of that. And it's just, I could definitely see myself getting one at some point. They sound pretty amazing.
Do you think it's confusing for people that they came out with the iPad Mini and the iPad 4 on the same day? Or do you think?
I think maybe. I think people were a little annoyed who got iPad 3s because now there's, you know, that they just came out with the iPad 3 and now there's a newer one.
On the other hand, though, if your iPad 3 was good for you and you liked it on the morning that the iPad 4 came out, there's no reason to think that it's any less good or that you should like it any less.
Exactly. That's what I say too. You know, if you're happy, and that's what, because Holly got an iPad 3, and you know she's still happy with it. It's not going to make a huge difference. I don't think. I think the processors are a little bit faster. I think it's mainly the GPU is a little bit faster. But it's not going to make a huge difference, and if you're happy with it, and that tends to be how I look at stuff. You know, if it still does what I need, then
yeah, I believe they did bump the processor up from the A5 to the A6.
Oh yeah, it does have the A6. That's right. And
now, how much real world difference that makes if you're a voiceover user, it's hard to say. I do know that I really like the more responsiveness with voiceover in the iPhone 5. So I'm guessing that A6 processor would do much the same thing with voiceover in the iPad 4.
But it could, because I have the iPhone 4S and Holly has the 5, and I have seen it definitely is even more like, it's the iPhone 4S is still pretty responsive, but the iPhone 5 is a lot faster. It's a lot more responsive even.
Yeah, but the truth is, you know, we're talking milliseconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the iPhone 4S is a dog that's hard to use or too, you have to wait for it.
No, and I'm still I didn't get an iPhone 5 for that reason. I'm still perfectly happy with my 4S. It still does what I need. So
I felt kind of guilty getting an iPhone 5 because I only had the 4S for 11 months, but I really wanted one, and it was so funny. It was my original plan to just hand down my 4S to my wife because she was eligible for an upgrade with AT&T. But I was going to take her upgrade and get the iPhone 5. But she saw on TV the iPhone 5 with the Retina display. She said, "I've got to have one." Mm-hmm. So we had to go do a major negotiation with AT&T to both end up with one, which we managed to do. But you know, it's just it's great. My wife is not a technology person. She uses it because she needs to get her work done and because she likes to be able to text and so forth. But she could, for the most part, care less about the technology in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But to see her get excited about the iPhone 5 is like, wow, these products are really reaching in and grabbing people who don't even care that much about technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was kind of cool to see. I got a big kick out of seeing that. I was thrilled that she wanted one, you know, that she was excited about it. It's just kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And people are getting excited about, and I think Apple's good at doing that. And they do that a lot with their ads, is they don't really focus on, you know, okay, this is the processor this thing has. This is like, here is our new thing, and here's some things you can do with it, you know? Like, they really, and I think that's helped them a lot.
Right. They don't dwell on it has, you know, 1 gig of RAM versus 500 megs. They don't care about those specs.
No, they just, here's what we have. Here are some apps that you might want to use on it. You know, here are some things that you can do with it. And that's what they've always done. And I think it works well for them.
Yeah, I think it's the right way to go, really, when it comes to the technology. But it's a very different approach than what Microsoft takes. Although I must say that it tickles me that I think Microsoft, with its Surface tablet, trying to build its own hardware and its own software, is trying to take a page from Apple's approach. I don't think it's going to work out very well, but they're trying.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give them the credit for trying, but yeah, I don't know. I've heard very mixed things about the Surface.
Well, I think they're trying to take a page from Apple and build the hardware and make it all work together, but at the same time, they're being a bit less than true to that idea by trying to make it be a tablet and a laptop all in one. And you know, it's just doesn't work that well, because Microsoft Office really isn't a tablet oriented suite of software, and so it doesn't run all that well. And so, I mean, it's just interesting. I don't want to get off on a big Surface discussion, because that's not what we do on this podcast, but I think it's fascinating how the other players are trying to do something to compete with the iPad in the tablet market, and they're it's not working out too well.
Not really. And I think it definitely is. I mean, the way things, I mean, the iPhone really changed everything as far as other companies. You know, now all phones are pretty much touchscreen phones. They have a few non ones, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, most of the major ones are touchscreen. Just the way they work is a lot more iOS like. And I think that's the problem that BlackBerry, you know, has found themselves in now, that they weren't ready to change. And now they're kind of in trouble. But you know, things have really changed now, and I think tablets are kind of, you know, there are a lot of people who would be perfectly happy with just a tablet. Like, there are a lot of people who don't need a computer now. Yeah. Like, who could do everything they need with just a tablet. Like, if they just want to do their email and the web and, you know, a few games, and, you know, you can still do some work with them. Like, they have, you know, word processors and all the productivity apps and everything like that. But there are people who don't need a computer, and I think you're going to see more of that in the coming years.
I think you are, and there are people who will buy the Nexus 7 or the Kindle Fire because it's cheaper, but they won't be getting the iOS experience and getting all the apps that are available. And so I suspect people out there who aren't geeks like us, who don't really keep up with the nuances of these different devices, some of them will go for some of the cheaper tablets, but they just won't have the experience. And we might see a lot of them in a year or two coming back and saying, I'd rather spend a little bit of extra money and get the iPad. It's going to be interesting to see how that evolves and how that how that develops.
It's really interesting to follow that. I don't follow the other stuff, like the non-Apple stuff, as closely as, you know, I probably should. But it is interesting, and I want these other companies, you know, to be successful, because I want Apple to have, you know, really good competition, because, you know, that's always a good thing.
They do innovate more when they're being pushed by the other companies. Well, we've been going for a while, and I don't want to keep you much longer here. But I do want to ask you one more question, just to get your opinion about it. And that is, some people, even in the Apple community, are saying, well, you know, iOS is 4 years old now, and it's looking a little long in the tooth. Apple needs to really innovate, to jump ahead again? I'm just curious. And I know you said you don't keep up that much with other what's going on with other companies, but what are your feelings about iOS? Do you think it's getting old and out of date at this point, or do you think they need to do something significant with it?
It's hard to say. I mean, I know the one thing I hear people talk about a lot is the home screen and how it is kind of and there are some issues with the home screen, I will say. Like, for example, it is kind of a pain if you want to organize apps like into folders or move them. That's not the most fun thing in the world to do. I can see that. I'm not sure what they would do instead. It's hard to say. I mean, maybe who knows? Maybe with Johnny Ive kind of at the helm software wise now, maybe we'll see some new stuff. I don't know. I think most people are comfortable. Like, non-techie people are probably comfortable with the iOS way of doing things. It's interesting. I'm not really sure
it is interesting. I do suspect it'll be like always. Apple will surprise us with something new, and we'll say, "Gosh, we didn't even realize we needed that or wanted that." But it'll be something that we'll really like, and everyone else will then try to catch up. I mean, that's kind of the way it's gone for the last several years. So I sort of suspect that will happen, especially with Johnny Ives at the software design helm there. I'm betting we'll see less, I guess what they call schemorphic design. We'll see less, you know, things looking like leather binders and things like that. We'll see a simpler, more straightforward design that probably will be more efficient for people to use.
I think so. I think there'll be a lot of that. I think that they will be, but I think there's a lot of stuff. See, there's a lot of stuff that works really well. Like, a lot of people talk about, will Apple ever get rid of the home button or do we need a home button? But I don't know if they, because right now, if you're working with people and they're not very technical, you know, all you need to tell them is to get back to where you were, just press the button, you know, the only button on the front of it. And they get that. So they can always get back to where they were without having to learn. I mean, I think gestures are good, but like, I heard someone describe, you know, gestures as, and this is kind of a voiceover as being a separate thing, but just in general, gestures as being sort of like keyboard shortcuts on the computer. Like, if you know them, you can be really productive, but you don't need to know them. You know, so I think some of the other tablets is you have to do a lot of gestures to make things happen.
Right.
And I think that's something, if you know them, like, I mean, there are still certain things like, like on iOS, if you hit the home button twice, you know, you get to that app chooser thing, but you don't need to know about that. If you don't know about that, you can, you know.
You can still operate the device.
Yeah, exactly.
You can still get around, and that's a really good point. You don't have to know those things. It's better if you do, but you don't have to. Well, Darcy, this has really been a delightful time for me. I've thoroughly enjoyed just having the chance to sit with you and talk about these things, but I think we should probably be merciful to the Tech Doctor listeners and wrap it up here so that we don't keep people listening all day. I'm hoping that people have enjoyed this even half as much as I have.
Yeah.
Then they've enjoyed it a lot. But is there some contact information or any parting words that you'd like to say to people before we bring this to a close?
All right. Well, probably if people want to contact me, probably the best ways to do it is, I should mention that the thing that I'm involved with most now is the Maccessibility podcast, which you can find at maccessibility.net. If you want to contact me on Twitter, it's my Twitter name is DHS Darcy, so DHSDARCY, and I'm just Darcy on app.net. If you want to contact me there, those are probably the best ways. And this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me. And you're right. I think, you know, we could probably just, you know, geek out about Apple stuff for hours, but probably I don't know who else would want to listen to that. So, but it's been a lot of fun.
All right. Well, it's really been delightful having you, and I hope we can do this again sometime. And thank you for being here. And for you guys listening, if you would like to comments on what we've talked about here or would like to get in touch with me, as always, you can write techdoctor123@gmail.com. And until next time, so long from the Tech Doctor.